This is Disabled Girls Who Lift. We are reclaiming what's rightfully ours one podcast at a time. It's Mary Beth, Chloe, and Marcia bringing you the thoughts and unpopular topics to get you out of that ableist comfort zone. Hello, welcome to another episode of Disabled Girls Who Lift. We love you. You're amazing. We're also amazing. And you know we're amazing. That's why you're here. That makes you amazing too. Anyways, this is Marcia, she, they, sitting on Seminole Tribe land. I am a Black femme wearing my Black shirt, my Black headphones. I have a Black microphone, but there is color behind me. It's not everything Black. I'll let Mary Beth take it from here.
Yeah. What's up? It's Mary Beth sitting in Northern California on Ohlone land. I'm wearing a brown sweater shirt in my office that's a total mess right now, wearing my Black glasses and my Black headphones on my Black hair. And we're so excited to like finally have guests back on after a little bit of a hiatus from, you know, a third person. Mm-hmm. But it's nice to talk about people other than ourselves. So Kim, the woman with two first names, Kim Kelly, coming to us from Philadelphia on Lenni Lenape land. I'm just super glad that we finally have like a chance to talk to you because of this super long book tour you've been on. So she's an author. She's the author for Fight Like Hell, The Untold History of American Labor. Just an all-around badass, like, labor journalist. I see you, like, out there protesting on the streets for us. You know, you just have this diverse history of everything. Former vice staffer. Like, I love that you've got this, you're, like, a big fan of heavy metal and then tea and then whiskey and then books. It's, like, the vibe. Right energy that we need. You're raised on a nature preserve in South Jersey. So there's just so much that we got to talk about. Welcome, Kim.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm a white lady with long blonde braids, a Black long sleeve shirt with a purple Get Better Records logo. I've got some shiny purple plugs in today. I've got a bunch of facial piercings. Some tattoos are peeking out. And you can see some union posters in the background in my darkened room. And I stick out a little bit on the picket line sometimes because I come from the heavy metal world, and then I did a little bit of a pivot. And yeah, it turns out there are less satanic go heads and, you know, giant tattoos in the labor world, but they still let me in.
What do you know? Yeah, that's I guess there's so many questions, but the first thing I want to know about is, how are you raised on a nature preserve? What is, you raised with wolves? What are we talking about?
Right,
a garden?
Right.
Are we talking about a cabin? Like, what am I picturing here?
I was thinking elephants.
Oh, I mean, you can even see, like, there's, you can't see my bear rug. There's a coyote back here. I'm from this million acre nature preserve in the middle of South Jersey called the Pine Barrens. Mm. It's this kind of ecological oddity. It's got really strange, like, white sand and pygmy pitch pine trees, and the water's brown. It's a what? Very unique place, and nobody really knows about it because it's very rural. It's kind of isolated. There's not a lot going on in there. It's pretty sparsely populated. And I grew up in the middle of it, a little town called Chatsworth, where we had still had dirt roads, and there wasn't any trash pickup, and cell phone service was a joke, and my parents still have dial up. Like, it's a yeah. People need to tell people, oh, I'm from Jersey. They're like, oh, hey, bada bing, you know, Sopranos. Like, no. Like, if you just carve out a little piece of Appalachia, lop off the mountains and stick it down by the shore, that's like where I'm from.
Damn. That sounds magical, though.
It was a magical place to grow up and to be a kid. And then when you get a little older and you're a teenager and you like want to go to the mall or want to go to punk shows and everything's an hour and a half away, it feels a little less magical.
Yeah, no, that sounds like the setup for a horror movie right there. The teenager looking for a punk show.
It's kind of
hitch a ride. Yeah.
I mean, we have the Jersey Devil. We have our own demon out there.
Oh,
there's
nice.
A lot of like really weird history out there. It's It's a special place, but not everyone feels comfortable going there after dark.
Wow, that is interesting. So
So
how do you go
since
from
born to be
Northern
goth,
Mimi?
basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. So since there's very little like city life, like what kind of animals do you see out on the preserve?
So at home, it's I mean, there's a lot of white-tailed deer. My family all hunt. Black bears started coming down. Coyotes out there. Coyotes are always trying to kill my dad's chickens, which is a big topic of conversation whenever he calls me. Man, I remember one time when I was little, a mountain lion showed up and kind of terrorized the town for a while. Some guy out in the woods was keeping emus for a while because for a while in the 2000s they thought you could make money off of emu farms. Turns out you can't, so we just let them all loose. So there's all these weird giant birds out in the
Okay,
woods,
just hanging out.
and whippoorwills and squirrels. It's just like the forest, just straight
Yeah.
up forest. But then 20 minutes down the highway, you're at the Jersey Shore. So it's kind of this weird forgotten place, and this is where I grew up. And
Wow,
dang, where our
that's
parents still
nuts.
live.
Is it like protected area then?
Yeah, it's actually the Pinelands National Reserve is actually, I think, it's the first federally protected wilderness reserve. It was the first something of that nature in the US. And it's, yeah, there's always outside groups trying, like developers trying to build like horrible housing, or they're always trying to run pipelines through it.
Oh, I'm
But
sure.
there's a lot of local people who are just not having it, 'cause it is, and it's on like this massive aquifer of like some of the purest water in the country.
Right.
So it's a very special place that no one really knows about. I'm kind of like, maybe I shouldn't tell people about it, 'cause
Yeah.
if they show up, they're gonna ruin
They
it.
will ruin it.
Yeah.
Is that where you kind of got that fight like hell spirit from? Because it feels like you had to fight some animals to live there, and then you have to fight like
Outside
the
developers.
corporations.
Yeah. Oh my God, right? And then there's
Yeah.
grocery stores 30 miles away. There ain't nothing.
Yeah.
My family are all it's a very blue collar, working class and poor place. My family are all work construction, or we're teachers, or we're steel workers, so they're all in unions. And I always knew growing up, like, okay, unions are a good thing. I didn't think it was something I would necessarily get a chance to experience on my own, because I've always been a writer, and I've always, well, prior to the past 6 or 7 years, worked in the music business. And I didn't think that was something that really concerned me. It's like, oh, that'd be nice, but there's not like a heavy metal local 666 I can join.
Yeah, what's that have to do with
So
me?
yeah. And also just being I had this experience of being like bused into a much wealthier, much more like suburban neighborhood in high school, because there wasn't a that like where I grew up, there were so few kids. We all had to go out to the big high school with like 2,000 people and like an hour away.
That's a
And
culture
just
shock.
seeing, yeah, like seeing, like going from all the kids I grew up with from when I was 4 years old to 14, being dropped into this environment where people had like their both parents didn't work, or their dad was a doctor, or they had a garage, all these things that were so foreign to me. That's where I first kind of learned about things like class, and about how some people have a whole lot and some people don't have very much at all. And my mother was actually she worked in the school cafeteria there, so that was, but she was like the cool lunch lady, so it was
Oh.
kind of a different experience than you might expect from like seeing high school movies. But it was still like I definitely was like, oh, I don't feel like I belong here, but I'm here, so I guess I'll make the most of it. And I
Yeah.
guess that's sort of something I've carried with me in all the spaces I've been able to access since then. Because a lot of people that grow up the way that I did don't end up writing for big media outlets, or doing book tours, or doing half the things I've been able to do. So it's always in the back of my head, like, yeah, maybe you don't belong here, but fuck it, you're here.
Yeah,
Right. Yeah.
that's a vibe. Well, so how did you get there? How did you get into all these spaces? Because most of these things are like very high key, it's who you know situations, right?
Honestly, heavy metal is really what started and saved everything. I started, I've been a writer forever. That's like I say it's all I've ever been good at. There's some other stuff I can do, but that's my main thing. I picked up a couple of things. I can open a jar of pickles despite having 8 fingers. But yeah, I've always written, and I started writing for the county paper when I was a kid, like 15.
Oh,
And
that's so
yeah, it was
cool.
cute. I remember writing a column about how George W. Bush was a warmonger.
I
And they let me publish
love
it.
it.
I was like, okay,
At
I've always been like
15, yes.
this. I've always been like this. But yeah, so I was No, the college or in high school, I was just writing for all these, we called them like web zines back then, which is, oh God, I feel like I'm dating myself. I swear I'm like not old, but I'm not,
Yeah. Now
yeah,
we're the
just
in between.
aggressively millennial, I guess.
Yeah.
But I
Yeah.
remember Napster, like that kind of vibe. But yeah, I started writing for all these little publications. And by the time I was going to apply for college, I had this whole big packet of things I'd written for newspapers and zines and blogs. And I got into the music business program at Drexel. And I showed up, and everyone else there had like a demo or had done like they'd done like music businessy stuff. And I clearly just wanted to be a music journalist, but they somehow let me in. And I got to do some internships. I got involved with college radio, which is really the biggest way I met so many people that I'm still friends with. There's this event called CMJ every year where all the college radio kids would go to New York and mingle and schmooze and all that and meet lots of the promoters and people in the business. So I made a whole lot of friends when I was younger. And as I kept writing and kind of forcing my way into bigger publications, I just kind of built up this network. And I was always, at that point, I was probably one of the very few young women who was covering heavy metal, at least like in the extreme like black metal, death metal, grindcore stuff that I was into. And so I got a lot of attention for better and for worse. And oh yeah, it's been a ride. But yeah, I just kind of kept hustling when I was in college at the end. But I started a PR company and I started touring with metal bands. I started working for record labels. I just pieced together
Damn.
all
Wow.
these things, and I just kind of built a little life around that for a while, and like lived in my friend's closet in New York for $400 a month, and just was like, I was always broke, so being broke did not faze me. So I just hustled and made it work. And then I got a job at Vice, and things went a different direction eventually after I was the heavy metal editor there for a few years. Well, actually, I was the heavy metal editor there for like 5 years.
Oh,
But
wow, it's a long time.
yeah, but the first when I got hired, like 2 weeks later, a couple of my coworkers pulled me aside and were like, hey, we're thinking about unionizing. What do you think about that? I was like, oh, sick, cool. What can I do? I want to do everything. And then I kind of did. Like, obviously, I wasn't the only person, but I was very, very, very excited about it, very
Yeah,
invested. I
you're
was in that. Yeah.
ready to put the team on your back.
Yeah. Every meeting, every committee, every bargaining session, I was obsessed. And just through kind of being in that media world, once you know some media people, it's easier to meet other ones and being in Brooklyn and all of that shit. And I just kind of got to know a whole lot of people. And especially in labor world, they're excited. It kind of, again, a younger, it didn't, my gender didn't really matter that much this time, but like a younger person was excited about labor. So people were like, oh, what can we do to support you? What can we do to spread this? Because labor world, I mean, the working class is incredibly diverse, but like the people who work at unions or who have been covering unions for a long time aren't necessarily, don't necessarily reflect that. So they get excited when someone new is in here. So yeah, that was like my whole life story in like 5 minutes. But
Amazing.
yeah, I guess hustling and refusing to have all the people that told me I didn't belong there, refusing to listen, because there's a lot of places that I've been told I don't belong, but
I'm
fuck it, I'm
sure.
here.
Yeah, we know how that
Yeah.
goes. We definitely know how that goes. That is nuts. So you like first you're in this high school where you're like out of place. Then you're at the college where you're out of place. Then you're writing and you're like, who are you people? But that's fine. And now you're here. Great
Now
work.
I'm here and I'm still kind of out of place, but I think I don't know what it means, like what the place is, like what place I'm supposed to be. So I'm just gonna assume this is where it's supposed to be. Where
Yeah,
else would I be?
it's kind of weird to kind of carve that out too, because you have so many parts of yourself that don't really fit into. And I'm honestly, most of us do. Most of the people that we talk to and hang out with are like multitudes, like just waves of different things, and nothing fits. So it's like kind of hard to figure out when all you're handed is like cute little nuclear families, picket fence, you know, like it gets very orderly, this and this. And you're like, well, I like heavy metal and I like tea and I grew up with coyotes. Like, what's
Can see
good?
one of them over there.
Yeah, it's a vibe, but that it's really how a lot of us live. And then, you know, on top of that, you have a visible like disability. So I'm sure that probably played into a feeling out of place as well.
It's been one of the most interesting things about growing up somewhere so isolated. Like I will not exaggerate. I was with the same 20 kids, between 18 and 20 kids from kindergarten to the end of eighth grade. So I just, my entire social world was the same 20 kids. And so
It's
by the time I
nuts.
hit first grade, everyone was kind of over the fact that I was a little bit different. It wasn't really something that came up, or like I wasn't made to feel weird or different or anything, except when I started going to Hot Topic. That one was on me.
What are you wearing?
Yeah, that was like, that wasn't intentional, but like rolling up here with some claws was, I didn't really have a choice in the matter.
Yeah.
So I think that really helped when I got out into the bigger world, because I had spent so many years and like formative years kind of feeling like, oh, like no big deal, like whatever, that's just
That's
who I
true.
am,
That's
cool.
true.
And then I got out there, and then the rest of the world was like, oh, what is going on here? What? What do you mean?
What do you
Like,
mean?
this
My
is just,
hair? What is it? The
like
piercing?
this.
What do you want to know
Yeah, even before I had
about?
piercings or tattoos, it was kind of funny. I guess it gave me a little bit of armor, because having the kind of visible disability that kind of takes people off guard. So it's, I think there's some types of like visible disability that people like, they get at least like, oh, you use mobility aid. Oh,
Like they're
like this is your
mentally prepared,
situation.
like their brain has a setup, like, oh, people use
Yeah.
crutches.
Yeah.
Yeah, like
Yeah.
they're ready for that.
And then you show up and you're just like, I talk with my hands, and I have ectrodactyly, so my hands look different than other people's. And it's kind of a rare thing.
Yeah.
So people don't know what to do about it, because I don't make a big deal of it, because like, this is who I am. Who the fuck cares? But, and sometimes I make jokes that I think are funny, but make people very
Yeah, well, no, that's true. Like you're
uncomfortable.
opening the jar of pickles joke. Like somebody would be like, "Ooh, should I laugh at that
Like, yeah, it's a joke. And it is a joke, because I really suck at opening
Yeah,
jars.
I thought that was top tier comedy, but
Yeah. I
somebody,
haven't
I
made
could see
any
that.
shit.
I could see somebody being like, "Oh, I'm just gonna ignore
Right?
that."
Or like when I talk about like I'm gonna get my knuckles tattooed eventually, and I have just enough to say whiskey. And when I show people that, they're
Yeah.
like, oh, that's cool. Like, yeah, it's cool. Like, of course it's
Whiskey without
cool.
the E or with
No, full
the
on with the E. I've got
E?
just enough.
So it was meant to be. That's it.
It's meant to
Yeah.
be.
It's meant
But
to be.
yeah, it's at the point where like there've always been, at least since I started getting a little like in my teens on, I started getting more piercings and tattoos and like dressing like a metal person. I'm not quite, and I'm just like a lady, and people look at those in various ways. So I've never
Right.
quite been able to tell like what are people looking at when they look at me, right? I have this
Everything's
one.
already so unique.
Yeah, I was like, which thing? Where are your eyes?
Yeah,
I had
that's a
this
fair
one
point.
professor once in college. He was one of my favorites, in this incredibly lighthearted course about nuclear apocalypse in film and fiction. And he was my favorite. And at one point, he asked me, it was in the context of a conversation that made sense. He asked me like, oh, so this is your situation with your hands. Is that why you have so many tattoos and piercings and you have such a unique appearance? I was like, no, I don't, shit, I don't know. Am I
Again,
actively
how is
trying
that
to look?
cause and effect?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was
It's
like,
like a
did I think, okay, I'm already gonna look different, I may as well lean in. Or am I trying to distract people? It's like, oh, shit, I don't know. I'm 18. I just like death metal a lot, and I'm being left unsupervised.
That's an
But still.
interesting thought, though. But I think you're so right about the fact that you did feel supported in your formative years makes all the difference. So I think a lot of us, especially the girlies in their 30s, are realizing like this is a lot of shit from your childhood where you didn't feel loved or you felt ignored or somebody didn't support you in a certain way, and like how that shit all shows up in your relationships right now, today, or how you show up places today, right? Like that is actually a pretty big deal.
Yeah, it's because but my family never ever ever acknowledged or mentioned it, which is always kind of funny. And I think is probably why I never really, it took me until really only a few years ago I started being really out there and open and be like, hell yeah, this is what I look like. I didn't hide, but I just kind of like hope people wouldn't notice for a really, really long time. And thanks. My family never acknowledged it. I remember hearing when I was really little that when I was born, my dad wanted to sue the hospital because he thought they'd done something to make me come out with the wrong amount of fingers. And having that in the back of my head, I was like, oh, I'm not gonna mention that. Ooh, I guess I'll keep this to myself.
Yeah,
And it's
that
weird.
changed.
I even have a thing now. Like my partner is very, he's punk. He had like, if you think I look cool, he has like spikes and he's a very much has a look. He's very noticeable. He's very cute. I love it. But sometimes I don't really like drawing attention to myself. And so sometimes when he's all done up, I'm just like, can you just take something
Cool it
off?
down.
Yeah. Or something. Like it makes me feel, it like freaks me out a little bit when I think people are looking at me because I don't know
Yeah,
why they're looking at
right.
me.
Right.
And that's one of those residual things, I guess, of like, oh, extra layers of just like, oh, what are you looking at, buddy? But like, really, what are you looking
Yeah,
at?
I
That's
think that's what makes it
interesting.
so cool and interesting,
And
right?
no, that's interesting. So you didn't have to deal with like outright bullying or, nobody was like in your face about it, but at the same time, nobody was like, hey, Kim, you're different. That's cool. Like they were just like, we're gonna pretend it doesn't really, we're just moving on.
Well,
That's different.
it got, I started getting bullied really, really, well, really like full on harassed for it really awfully when I was an adult. When I was in my later 20s, when I was working at Vice and I wrote about heavy metal. I still do, but that was my main focus, heavy metal. And I wrote about it from a very like feminist, anti-fascist, anti-racist perspective. And wrote a lot about how it sucks that there's so much racism, anti-Semitism, and every ism you can think of in the metal world. And yeah, I mean, I've always been like, well, I haven't always been as I've learned and grown a lot over the years, but that's what I was known for. And a lot of people really didn't like that. And one of the ways that there's this one Nazi in Texas who ran a website. He it's been a weird life.
Start any sentence with this one
Yeah,
Nazi in
right.
Texas.
So one fucking guy who ran this like shitty metal website, he got kind of obsessed about me because he thought I was trying to ruin metal by making it too safe and woke and just, whatever. And he decided he was gonna, oh, this still like bums me out. He made this Facebook page called Kim Kelly's Hand. And he took all these
What in the
screenshots
actual
of
fuck?
videos, yeah, that I'd done like interviews and videos over the years. He found took all these screenshots like showing my hands and then
What
also
the
had some
hell?
cartoons of just like crabs and like Leela from Futurama and all these things. And it got like I saw it one day and I was like, don't
How is
like
that
that.
legal? Is that not a hate crime?
And
Like,
it took, I gotta tell you, I was at Vice at the time and I was friends with the comms department and I hit them up. I was like, can you like call your friends? Can you do something? And I had a
hello.
bunch, yeah, I had a bunch of friends who were reporting it and they kept saying, oh, this doesn't violate our community standards.
I'm
Basically,
sorry.
it would probably still be up if I hadn't had that job and had access to those channels. I remember seeing there was like 600 likes on it or something. And I was just like,
Yeah,
this
people
one.
really spend their time on some bullshit.
That one hurt. That one I didn't like very much. But even one thing that was kind of funny is I saw even people that I knew hated me or hated what they thought I was, like would comment being like, I don't know, man, this seems a little low. Like maybe that's a little much. I
Wow.
was like,
You have
man,
your haters rooting for you, you
yeah.
know.
When the other Nazis are like, maybe just take it down a notch.
Yeah, something's up there.
So I got,
That
yeah.
is gross.
Yeah, fairly chill childhood. But then as I got more public and more people knew what I looked like and had opinions about it, it became more of a something that I thought about in ways I hadn't really thought about before.
Yeah, that's different. It's like a different kind of culture shock. It's like, oh, this is a problem now? Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah, this is the one thing. You can't criticize my writing. You can't call me ugly. You can't call me this, that, the other. But like, oh, so this is the thing. Why? All right.
Yeah, that's a
Thanks.
big, that is a big yikes. You know, that makes me think of the screenshot level. Like, I remember when the freaking Transformers happened and Megan Fox and people had all of these weird things about her thumb and like they didn't like the way her thumb looked. I just remember thinking how fucking weird it was. Like, people spent energy going through photos, like the same vibes. And again, these things don't really violate terms of service. They like you could do that.
No, just being like, look, this person's body is a little bit different. Look how bad that is. That's fine. You can get away with that.
Yeah.
It's like,
That's
That is pretty
somehow
fucking violent.
totally normal to do. It's fucking weird.
It's so
Absolutely
weird.
strange behavior. Like, I don't understand. Didn't that guy have a job, a website to run, something to do, water his plants? I don't know what Nazis do in their spare time, but Jesus.
Right? Like, they write weird blogs and run a different Nazi website. That guy.
Yeah, she write angry letters to ship out to people. Don't you have something else to do? I don't know.
Right. They don't. That's the thing. That's why they're Nazis. You don't
Yeah.
end up like that if you have a healthy social or political or cultural life.
This is true. That sucks. I'm sorry you went through that. But becoming like kind of a public figure, do you find yourself like guarding things a little bit more, like privacy, security wise, whatever?
Yeah, like I spent as before moving back to Philly, I was super involved in like just the New York anarchist anti-fascist world anyway. So like security was something that's on my mind anyway. But especially as like I suppose I got more eyeballs on my work or on Twitter or whatever, more people who I don't know knew who I was.
Yeah.
I've gotten much more like tried to protect my privacy in ways that I can. Like I have, a secret Instagram and things like that, where like I put my real life. Then there's, I don't know. It's a weird thing. I don't know that I was ever prepared for it, and it's not like I'm a fucking Kardashian or something like that. But
Yeah.
it is still a level of just eyeballs that I
Yeah.
was not anticipating. I'm still
Yeah.
not quite sure what to deal with, and it does make me anxious about, being hacked or being doxxed or all these things. But what do you do, man?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I'm locked down as much as I can be on various social media networks and all my two factors and all that. And I pay for Delete Me and I have a scary boyfriend and I go to the
Yeah.
gym. So like,
Yeah. It's
It shows you there's so much power in publishing as that's what you do, but then there's also the scary power behind self-publishing. Like anybody can post and write anything that could be not true about you or just like shaming any person. You know, like
I've gotten so
it's
much of it. Yeah.
ridiculous how
Like,
much
wow, we have the
power people
freedom to
have.
share our voices, but also these people have the freedom to harass us
Exactly.
for doing that.
Oh yeah,
Well,
that yeah.
I'm starting to see more like I don't know, like terms and conditions where they're adding disability or like ableist behavior and language to their guidelines, which is like
Finally.
major, you know. But the fact that they didn't have that, how long ago did that happen? 5, 10 years ago?
Not even that was, let's see, maybe 2018?
Yeah,
Yeah, 'cause it's
pretty
right before I got
recent.
laid
4 years.
off.
Jesus.
Yeah,
Yeah, like
pretty
this is
recent.
fine. It's like,
Yeah.
man, if I had, it would
Jesus
still be there if I
Christ.
didn't happen to have that
And
job.
there's not much you could do about, I mean, you can, not post your location every time you share things, and you could browse with a VPN and like two factor, but you can't stop someone from taking screenshots of you.
Yeah, it's
You
I don't even
can't stop
do.
somebody from like reposting. Like I remember one time I got a bunch of followers on my Move with Marcia page once because somebody had taken my like foot exercise video and reposted it on their foot fetish page. And then I was getting like DMs like, "Hey, can you spread your toes?" Like,
Shit, though, that's not even fair.
yeah, so it's like it those any of that can happen. It is very unsettling.
Being a visible human online is scary enough when you don't have something going on that some people see as an opening or an issue,
Yeah,
right?
true.
Like, that's part of why I spent so much of my existence not really acknowledging or mentioning or even kind of hiding like my disability because I just didn't want to hear it. I assumed that any attention I got would be bad because I'd spent, this is before the Facebook affair, but I'm just like, I don't want to stick out any more than I already do. Even though like clearly like it's not like I can hide my hands anyway. I don't know what I was thinking. I had a lot of hoodies, pockets, and a lot of crossed arms, a lot of that. It was really only when I went to sideshow school that I changed the way I thought about all that.
Oh yes, pray tell, what is
Yeah, tell
sideshow
us
school? What
about
is that?
that. Casual
Interesting.
aside, right?
My other half, he's from Coney Island, like full-on Warriors, grew up there, born and raised. And I used to go, when I lived in New York, I'd go down and see him. And one day we went like on a little date to the Coney Island sideshow. And I was like, oh, this is fucking cool. Like, I didn't know this was still something that existed. So I was interested in sideshow history and circus history just as kind of like a slight interest, but I never really like seen it. We went there. I was like, oh man, this is really cool. One of the performers was actually somebody I grew up with.
What?
He performs under the name Velvet Crayon. His name's Eric, and he's like, yeah, he uses a
That's
wheelchair and he does
nuts.
like all kinds of wild stuff. He's a musician. He does burlesque. He has grown up from what I know him. But seeing that stuck in my head, like, wow, like that's really cool. And he's so like he's disabled and he is killing it, and people are clapping and like no one's being shitty. And it's like, oh, that's really cool. We can do that. And then later that summer, I think it was that summer, or maybe it was next summer, he had mentioned something. Oh yeah, I think they have like a sideshow school that people go to. It's like, what? That's not real. I googled it and it was. And the next session was starting in like 3 weeks from then. I was like, oh my God, I should
Clearly,
go to
this is a
sideshow school.
sign.
And I pitched it around because the price was like $1,500. So it was a little steep to do it. I was like, oh shit, I gotta like write about this so I can subsidize myself. And Vox agreed to run it, so I went to sideshow school. Yeah. Just real casual. And there's
Nice.
this moment, like the first, like we got in, everyone sat around this table, and the professor with an A, Adam Reelman, he was going through some of the traditional sideshow hierarchy things. You know, you have your natural born freaks at the top, the royalty, people who were born different. And then this,
Wow.
yeah, the second tier are self-made freaks, your tattooed ladies, your lizard men, people that altered their bodies on purpose as part of their acts or because they wanted to be different. And
Right.
at the bottom were the so-called working acts, your sword swallowers, fire breathers, people who weren't different but had acquired these skills. And it was this kind of inverted world where like people that were born like me, like we were sideshow royalty. We were special. We were like valued. Like we used to be like the stars. And I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. And he ran around, he asked, yeah, dude, are any of you, would any of you qualify as a natural born? And I was like, yes. And he was like, oh, they've never had someone who would like a natural born freak be in that sideshow school. I was the first one. And
Whoa.
they were like,
Oh,
whoa,
he was
this is
waiting for
really
the no.
cool. Yeah, he was like, oh, I've never had anyone. Oh, wow. And just like that moment, I was like, oh, this is really cool that I have this unique thing that has this specific kind of historical and cultural legacy attached to it. Like there have been lobster boys and lobster girls throughout history, a couple really famous ones. And I can do that. That's part of my history too, as someone with this very specific disability. And I learned how to breathe fire and hammer nails into my face and walk on glass and swallow swords and all
You
these
did
things.
everything. Oh gosh.
Wow. Yeah,
Oh
because now in the sideshow, it's not enough to be born different. You have to also have acts because we don't just exhibit ourselves because just being who you are isn't
It's
an
not a
act.
spectacle anymore. It's just like stand there.
Yeah,
Gotta
yeah.
swallow a sword, damn
Yeah,
it.
which is really hard. I'm still not good at it. Really
Yeah, I don't know if I would
painful.
have been there, but I'm happy for
I know, like of
you.
all things that have my disability like awakening is like, oh, and I'm just like
Yeah.
hammering a nail into my nose or like trying not to vomit over a trash can. Like I'm special.
Oh
But like, it was a really,
That's
it's kind of
wild.
a magical thing. I started performing a little bit as Greta the Lobster Girl. I did a couple performances and then COVID hit and I did not go anywhere.
Dropped
But
it, yeah. But there's
yeah.
so much beauty in like finding the like the love for that spectacle, you know, because so many of us grew up with hatred toward that disability and like Yeah. those types of names. Like that name could be so cringe for everybody with ectrodactyly or anybody with a limb difference, but like creating that for yourself is so liberating, right?
I
In
felt
some
like
ways.
reclaiming something that I'd been like people have made fun of my claws or my lobster, like things like that over
Yeah.
years. I was like, you know what? Yeah, I do have lobster claws. Pinch, pinch,
So
pinch.
what?
Like,
This is it. Yeah, look
yeah,
at it.
it was just such a shift. And after that, I was like, oh, yeah, no, this rules. This is fucking cool. And I'm proud of that. And I'm proud of myself. And I'm just gonna be super out here about it. Like, I've got I wonder if you can see it. I have this lobster girl tattoo on my
Oh my
arm.
gosh, hell yeah. Yeah,
It's huge too.
all in
It's
your
amazing. Yeah, I also
what?
have a huge lobster on my ribs. I'm just
That's
taking
pretty
it
cool.
back. I just, yeah. And I started, that was really the point where I kind of felt a little bit more comfortable identifying, like, I'm a disabled person. I'm part of the disability
You said
community.
it out
Like,
loud.
yeah, because like
Yeah.
for a long time I felt
Yeah.
like I didn't count, like I wasn't disabled enough. Which is like a fucked up thing for someone to think about themselves. But I spent my whole life being told, oh, don't worry about it. It's not a big deal. It's fine. And then I got in this space where it's like, oh, no, this is great. Like, it's very, it, like, this is good and cool and good for you for being out here and doing this. Like, oh, okay, maybe I do have a space in this world, even if it's through a very strange pathway.
Yeah, fun way to get there.
And it was all happening at the same time too. That's amazing.
That is pretty wild. But
Okay.
that's like so real though. A lot of us go through that. What does disabled mean? Am I disabled? Am I supposed to say that? Am I allowed to say that? Like, because when you do say it with other able-bodied people, you're right. They're like, oh no, honey, no, you're not. You're not. No, you're not, honey.
All the time. I'm like, oh, you're not like really disabled. I'm like, I mean, would you like to see some of the things I struggle
Yeah,
with?
like you don't define that for me, but yeah, it's a very black and white thought for people. I would love to hear more about the union thing in the book, but I think we will take our quick pause to pay for our anchor hosting service right about now. All right, well, we're back. I think it's okay to care because it makes you feel very one-dimensional and you're not. For people to acknowledge all of the things that make you, it feels weird.
It's even now when most people know me for my labor stuff, I'm like, I spent most of my life in heavy metal world, and this labor thing is new. I did not spring fully formed from like a page of labor notes. Like, I've done a whole bunch of other shit. But it's cool. I don't know.
But was that when you started becoming in front of the camera more? Like,
For the
you did a
union
lot more
thing.
interviews.
Yeah, that's the thing. I think one of the reasons I got more visibility, like as a human, is because it really really started popping off in early 2021. 2020? Maybe 2020. Shit. One of the two.
Early
Maybe
Panini or not early
very early,
Panini?
like pre-vac, like earliest, but like J
Okay, yeah,
February.
that's
That's
2020.
nine.
Yeah.
Okay,
Yeah, that's 2020 for sure.
That's right. God. But yeah, I started doing some video stuff. Because there was this Amazon warehouse in Bessemer, Alabama that was organizing.
Oh shoot, I forgot about that was the time frame.
And they're still out here too. But I went down there for this outlet, More Perfect Union, that was launching, and it was like a video thing. And I did a whole bunch of videos that got a bunch of attention. So I was like the first person there doing video coverage, and it was like a big story. And like I had my little face in there. And so I think that kind of was the beginning of people kind of knowing more what I look like, what I sound like, and all that. Because in metal world, like metal world is vast and global, but it's still compared to, metal people and people who have jobs, it's a much bigger
Little different.
audience. Yeah, and even then, I think I have my hands in my pockets all the time because it was cold. So who knows? I
Oh
don't know,
yeah.
man. All people see on Twitter is just my braids and
Yeah.
my sparkly ass face, so who knows what's going on under there?
That's interesting. And the big shift to cover these things, did that come with you becoming a part of a union movement? Or were you like, oh, let me look into this?
Yeah, it's very much like that came first because I was working at Vice, heavy metal editor, and we organized with the Writers Guild of America East. I'm actually in my third term on the council there. So I'm like in
Ooh,
there watching the
fancy.
sausage get made. It's very ugly. But I got super involved in organizing with the union and organizing my coworkers, and it kind of became my whole little world for a while. And I was already also involved in like various political organizing stuff in the New York anarchist anti-fascist world. And this was like 2015, 2016, when a whole lot of people were paying a whole lot of attention to politics for very valid and terrifying reasons. And so I just found myself going to so many fewer metal shows and so many more union meetings or actions or this, that, and the other, that it just kind of took over all my attention. And that started to reflect itself in my writing. My day job was still writing about heavy metal on the internet, which is great. I miss it. But I was also feeling kind of penned in. I was trying to find ways to bring that into it as writing. And I was freelancing a lot at the time because one of the reasons we unionized Advice is that they were paying us like shit.
Oh, yep,
So I
that's
was already
usually money.
freelancing. Yeah, I was already freelancing to make up some extra money anyway. I
Yeah.
started pitching labor-related stories around, specifically to Teen Vogue. And I'd written a couple things for them previously to that about just like prison industrial complex things. And I pitched them some labor stuff and it worked and people clicked on it and the editors and I got along and we just kind of built a good relationship. And all of a sudden, Teen Vogue was a place that ran labor coverage.
And that's an even younger audience. That's
Yeah.
amazing.
And it's so funny because I think at least my time in the metal world has directly impacted the way that I'm able to write for broader audiences in labor and political and workers' rights world because I spent such a long time writing about this very willfully obscure, complex, pretty for a lot of people, unappealing music for mainstream audiences, like trying to explain to an NPR audience why black metal is cool or why someone on Brooklyn Vegan should care about the new Cannibal Corpse record. Like, you learn how to break things down and make them more accessible and put some excitement and passion into it. And that's the approach I took with talking about labor unions, which for a lot of people are just kind of this concept of like, oh, I think my dad was in the union. Like, I don't know what that is. Like, no. This is very cool and very relevant. Here's why it's awesome. And I'm going to explain it in a way that doesn't seem like I'm not talking down to you. I just want to make sure that you get
Get in
what's
on
going on.
this.
Yeah. Like if I hadn't come from the metal world and had that experience, I wouldn't be good at this at
No,
all.
that makes sense. And I would say definitely as like children of immigrants, we don't know anything about
Yeah.
that shit. No.
Well, there's so
Everything in
much
America is get a job, you get money, you get rich, no
right.
problems.
So much of your rights as a worker, you don't like stop to think about because your focus is on making that dollar, coming home, feeding your kids, whatever, you know? Until it actually starts affecting you, then it's like, oh shit, I broke my leg on the job, or
It's a
they're
very
not.
specific industries too, right? Like if you're saying that, you're talking like factory manufacturing stuff.
Right. There's this idea, especially in the US, up until I think pretty recently, that unions were only really available or only really mattered to certain types of workers, like the factory guys, the Rust Belt dude in a hard hat, dudes like my dad, construction worker, hard hat, bad political opinions. Which, and it's never just been that. That's why I wrote a whole book about it. That's why I talk about it all the time. But even now, like some of the most like fervent and animated sectors we're seeing unionized right now are in retail and in academia and in the media and in
I
sex
love it.
work
I'm seeing the
and in,
Starbucks stuff
yeah,
going. I'm like,
exactly.
I'm seeing the Amazon thing. I'm like,
Right,
go
warehouse
for it.
workers, like younger people, black and brown people, queer and trans workers, like it's like the forefront of the movement right now is being led by people who have always been here, but very seldom got recognized for their efforts or their presence. And
It's
it is
like
really fucking
not
cool.
like you weren't like it's not like oh you work at Starbucks like you shouldn't deserve to be paid fairly type shit like oh get another go to school and get a better job
Right. Oh,
like
you
that's
flip burgers at McDonald's, or you work in an office and you do a white collar quote unquote job, so you're fine. Like, yeah, if you have a boss, you're probably getting exploited, so you should do something about it,
It's
and you're
pretty
allowed
wild.
to do something about it.
And you
That's the
are.
thing.
I'd like to see it more in healthcare because that part always confuses me because like my mom was a nurse. They had a union, but then I hear about how doctors are treated and I'm like, I guess y'all don't have one, because that sounds like these people have been working 27 hour shifts and shit. Like,
I think
this
there are
isn't adding
some.
up.
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't even know as much about the healthcare world. I know that it's like a huge sector for union workers, especially in nurses. But yeah, doctors, I don't know. I don't know if their position in the org chart or the hierarchy is such that they don't have access to unions. But even if you don't have the ability to officially unionize, you can still pull together with your coworkers and make demands and go on strike or protest. Like, because there are some workers who are left out of labor laws who don't have the legal ability to organize, but there's always ways to get around it, right? Like to get a little creative.
Oh,
And
like
one
the
thing,
Kellogg's thing, right?
yeah, well,
Or
I mean, they had a union, but I think about things like incarcerated workers who do not legally have the right to unionize thanks to the 1977 Jones versus North Carolina Prisoners Labor Union. They don't have that right, but they're still organizing and they're still striking. There was a big strike in Alabama last month. One of the stories in my book, I interviewed one of my best friends who was incarcerated in Rikers during the pandemic, and he and some of the guys in his dorm, they led a strike because they needed PPE and soap and these basic protective measures that they weren't getting. So they had a hunger strike. Like there's so many different ways to organize and to fight for what you deserve. And labor law in this country has not kept up with the way that work has evolved and the way that society has evolved, but that doesn't mean that, I mean, fuck it. Like if the law does says you can't do something, I mean, maybe you don't have to listen to that law.
Yeah, I
Yeah,
mean, there's
that law needs to
still,
be changed.
yeah, we love following rules when the rules make sense.
Right? That's the thing. That's the
Yes. But
caveat.
it's good to know that they're like any group of any company can get together. Like you all have the power to shut it down. Just get together, get the ears of whoever's above and like make change. And not fear like getting fired, because that's always the biggest thing, right? You need everybody on board, or
Everybody
else
has to
it's
stick
not worth it.
together.
That's the thing. The thing that I always like to emphasize is, and whenever I talk to anybody about this stuff, is that there are more of us than there are of them.
They
Like
need
they need
us.
us,
They
not the
need
other way
us.
around. I mean, look at what's happening with Twitter. They fired everyone, and now it's just going to hell in a handbasket. Like
Oh,
a
God.
couple of rich guys who think they're smart cannot run everything. We've seen that very clearly.
Seriously. And it's so funny because going back to the healthcare thing is like, as somebody that's working in these places, like I can't do it because nobody would ever, everyone be, oh, get fired. I'm like, yo, they need you. Like, if you weren't here freaking changing these bed sheets or, prescribing this medication, they would not be making their billions. So, like, if everybody was just like, yo, fuck this, we're out, what are they gonna do?
Getting down, they're not getting down in the coal mines, they're not emptying out the bed pans, they're not getting on the factory floor, and they're not going down there and coding their way into whatever Twitter's trying
Yeah, I
to
think it's like that power dynamic. People really do feel that so much. And like, yeah, it's not always pretty, I'm sure. There are risks that you are taking, so
Absolutely, but
and it's hard for groups too, like you mentioned, like sex work and how people who are already like dehumanized or seen as like that's all illegal work anyway, don't give a fuck about the human. And the fact that that type of work is still happening every day, it's just so important.
It's, I mean, I'm following it's interesting to talk about sex work, because I was just on a panel with a bunch of folks here in Philly that work in Kensington with folks who are involved in the street economies there. And I was telling them about how I've been covering this union drive by strippers in North Hollywood at a Star Garden Topless Club, and how it's really exciting. It's going to have a really big impact on the industry once they win.
Oh,
And
yeah.
like they're like, yeah, that's really cool, but we also want to emphasize like that is kind of a privileged stance in the realm of sex work to be able to unionize, to be able to be public, to be able to take those steps, because so many people who do work in the sex world industry, like sex work industry, like their labor is criminalized. Some of them, their very identities are criminalized. Like they've had to find, like I have a whole chapter in my book about sex work, And so much of it, like, that's a community of workers that has never had an equal shot when it comes to being protected as workers under the law. So
No.
there's so many different ways they've organized and had to protect themselves and their work and their labor inside and outside the law. Like, it's, yeah, there's no one way to be a worker in this country, and they're all valid except cops.
Yeah. Except gaps. It's wild with the sex work too, because even like the way that it's criminalized, right? Like, who do they punish and who do they put away and stop? Like, it's not the people that are abusive and exploiting. It's not the sex traffickers. Like,
No, it's people
right.
just trying to go do their goddamn job
Yeah.
because that's what works for them, or they don't have a better option, or whatever other reason they might have.
Yeah,
Like,
it's
it's
literally just a job.
right, clock in, clock out. It should be easy
Yeah.
and safe enough to just clock in and clock out. It's just all the stigma and the misinformation and lack of understanding and just being in this Puritan ass country that we exist within. I guess a lot of workers have been, not in that specific way, but a lot of workers have been impacted by the idea that some jobs just aren't good. They're not valid. They're not
Right.
worthwhile. And by that token, the people that do them aren't good or valid or worthwhile. I mean, that's something you've seen throughout history in this country. We see it right now, this very second.
Right.
And it's labor history is, it can be so depressing. But it can be like, there definitely, when I was writing this book, I definitely was like, had many times sitting on that little couch there, just like, oh, this is terrible. But
Gosh.
there's so many wins and triumphant moments and small victories and phenomenal people that it's, I guess it is what we make of it, right? That's what it's always been.
Yeah, I agree.
Getting on my like Unity soapbox now.
I well, I don't know. I don't know it. I mean, since you study the actual history, I don't know if it's just access, internet, or what, or whatever. But is there more of a workers' movement like going on right now?
We're in this moment that I think there's a lot of different factors kind of coming into play, the pandemic being a massive one of them, or being,
Right.
yeah, being a huge one. Especially in the past couple of years, like as the pandemic has pandemicked and still not gone away, we've seen the way that people kind of understand the value of their lives and their labor shift. Because there's that those couple months earlier on, right, where we were all talking about essential work and essential workers and banging pots and pans and putting up signs, and some people got raises or hazard pay temporarily. And then that all went away. And all of those workers who knew full well, like, the labor we do keeps this whole fucking thing going.
It was very obvious at that
Yeah,
point.
they had
That's
to go back
true.
to work, and they went back into the jaws of the beast and were abandoned. But at that point, they're like, oh, so none of this, nothing happens without us. Interesting. And I think we saw a bunch of high profile strikes kick off that year, whether it was John Deere or Kellogg's. We saw, there's a bunch of stuff with the economy that is not really my forte, but I just like, you have to ask somebody nerdier than me about that. But it
Yeah.
seems like the job market tightened. There was more opportunities for people to find jobs and to leave. For a hot minute, the government helped us for a second by having that increased unemployment and giving out the stimmies. Some people had a little bit of wiggle room to figure out what they wanted to do. And
Right.
we've seen the younger generation who's come of age in this moment and enter the workforce kind of have a different view than I think maybe people our age and people older than us have, where they're like the post-Bernie generation, right? They're like, oh, we are much more willing to kind of go to the mat for issues that people older than us think aren't part of the whole union movement. Like, besides wages, besides basic workplace conditions, we also see younger workers fighting for racial justice, for trans rights, for reproductive rights, for disability rights, for all of the aspects that make up workers' various identities. Just understanding, like, we're not just one thing, right? Like, you're not just a power lifter. I'm not just a writer. We're so much more than what our boss sees on a balance sheet. And I think that is driving a lot of the younger people that we're seeing organized places like Starbucks or Amazon or REI or in the cannabis industry or the strippers in North Hollywood. Like this understanding that it's bigger than your paycheck. And this is a way that we can actually force some of the change that we so desperately need, because Lord knows all the other traditional or available venues are not working.
Yeah, this is it. It's the money. This is
Yeah,
it.
hit
The
him in the
money.
pocketbook.
Yeah, hit him in the wallet. That this is it. That this is the moment.
Yeah, I loved seeing that there was just so much more energy on like challenging the status quo. Before, we were just so used to showing up and, you know, doing what we had to do, and now we're questioning everything,
Yeah,
right?
I'm into it.
it's pretty nuts. It's pretty nuts. Even my like I have some employees, and like some of the shit they say, I'm like, we don't do that over here. Calm down. Like, oh my gosh, you know, I'm just not feeling good today. And you know, is it okay? Do you if you need me to like calm down, stay home.
Like we understand,
Like the
right?
work is always gonna be here. What are they gonna say? Like, relax. Like it, but it's nuts because that's what we're used to. We're used to being treated like machines, honestly.
Right. That's something that stuck with me when I went down to Alabama to talk to those Amazon workers that first time. Just see these folks who are middle aged, they're dealing with health issues now because of working these backbreaking 12-hour days, just kind of looking at me and saying, we are not robots. We're not machines. We're human beings and our bodies are breaking down. Like that just, how can you watch that and not feel like either I need to be down there fighting with them, or oh shit, I'm doing something wrong? Like,
Right,
how,
right.
like all these billionaire types, it's, back in the day, like in the 1800s that I read about, all these great big strikes that happened, the railroad barons and oligarchs, they were not people that regular folks had access to. You could maybe write a letter, but good luck. Now, Jeff Bezos is out here on Twitter. Elon Musk
Right.
is sitting around replying to
Replying all
people.
day.
Like,
He's just
we
sitting
can
in his
tell them what they
bathtub.
think. Like, I think a little bit of that mystique is broken down too. Like, oh, I can go on there and tell somebody with $1 billion to go fuck himself. Yeah. We didn't always be able to do that. Like, that's
And
pretty
you won't
cool
get shot
too.
or arrested, right?
Yeah.
That's another thing. And it depends on the country you're in, because back in the Philippines, you absolutely cannot.
Yeah, that's
Right.
true. That's true. It does depend
Even,
on the country.
yeah, in this country, it's a little safer to strike and to unionize, because back in the day, like during the mine wars in West Virginia, like in the early 1900s, like they would send in armed guards to shoot the miners who just wanted to organize a union. Like, there's a very long history
Jesus.
of that, of cops and private detectives and Pinkertons murdering and intimidating and generally getting in the way of people organizing. It's not to say they don't still do it, but it's a little less blatant now. So, progress.
Yeah, now it's like behind closed doors intimidation type stuff. But even
That's
that,
true.
like with Twitter, like the Starbucks one, like I remember seeing the person that was running, like literally like live tweeting, like, oh, I'm in here right now. My manager's telling me that I have to do this. Oh, my manager's searching through the file folder that I just
Oh,
passed, like
yeah.
literally
I
like
think that was
live
Layla.
fucking live tweet, you know, like
Yeah, that
you can't hide that shit anymore.
the visibility, I think, is
Yeah.
so empowering for people. Like, oh, and also, like, not just to put it all on Twitter, but just being
Yeah.
like the social media in general. Like, oh, we can get, we don't have to wait for the New York Times to show up. We can get out here and
Yeah.
show
We don't
that
have
this
to
is
beg
possible.
NBC to cover our story. Like,
And have them
this.
twist it around into what works best for the
Yeah.
people
There's
that own
people on
NBC.
TikTok with entire exposes and freaking stories that are just ready to rip.
It's a
Yeah.
really cool time to be a person that writes about this stuff. Like, I can barely keep up, but it's literally my job too.
Every
That's
day there's
nuts.
something new. And I learn more too that like all of these corporations already have surveillance on their employees, right? Constantly checking to see if they're sneaking in fries at the McDonald's or pocketing some change from the cashier. Like that's been happening forever. Now the
Yeah.
surveillance is turned around on the employers and on their bosses,
Yeah.
which is nuts, right? It's beautiful.
It's so good. I
Because they're
mean,
doing the real illegal shit, not just eating fries on their lunch break.
it's like over 100 years ago in 1911, the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory fire that came about because the bosses of the immigrant women and children who worked there, they would always lock the doors, make sure nobody was stealing fabric scraps, little pieces of cotton.
Wow.
Same thing as a fucking French fry, right? And 146 people died. They burned to death. And now we're at this point where, like you said, the watch, like people, they might be trying to surveil us about those scraps of fabric or those French fries or that, a little extra latte now, but we can see them and we can show
Exactly.
everyone else what they're
Yep.
doing. And they really don't like that.
No.
Big facts. Big facts.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is grand. I do have one more question for you before we wrap up. I think we're like around an hour-ish by now. I want to know more about this baby lifting, because if you're a heavy metaler, like I feel like you should have been
You got to
lifting
be a heavy
weights.
lifter.
I feel like you
It's
should
all
have been
metal all
in these. What
around.
happened?
Right? I spent so much time on the road when I was younger. Like I really need to start going to the gym regularly in like 2018 or so, and I would go with my best friend to bar classes, which are brutal in a very different way.
Yeah,
And I
I
still go
tried
to
one.
them.
No thanks.
Yo, they have no like business being that hard. I
No
start doing
thanks.
that. But
Passed.
really, I've always been interested in lifting because that's like what I'm drawn to. I'm built like a Soviet propaganda poster already. Like I feel like I should be like that's my destiny. But having like unbalanced arms and different fingers, it's like this seems like this could be a little dicey. I don't know. It's one of those things that I wish I could do. Like I always wanted to be a boxer. I don't know about all that. Oh, there's various things that I would love to do, but I don't know if I have the right equipment. But I went to kind of on a whim, there's this barbell gym here called Collective Strength here in
Oh yeah,
Philly.
yes, I love them.
Yeah. And I followed them on Instagram just like, oh, they're really cool. That looks nice. And I saw a year or so ago they were doing beginner like workshops, like barbell beginner workshops. And I looked at it, I was like, huh. Maybe I could try it. And I went to a couple of them. I went to a bench and I went to squats. And
Wow.
I did not go to deadlifts. I was like, I know my limits. I don't think I'm set up for that one quite yet. So I didn't know about trap bars yet. But yeah, I went to a couple of those. I started going to Collective Strength, just going by myself and doing my little squats and trying to do my little benching. And it was so fucking fun, and I felt so cool and strong and powerful, especially because I like have different equipment than everybody else. I'm like, yo, I can do this. That is the most. It just feels really, really cool that I thought I'd never be able to do this awesome thing, but turns out I can. And now I've finally stopped traveling for this damn book tour, and I'm back to my little gym. I go to a gym close to my house now. There's a trainer there I work with sometimes, and we're just trying to figure out what works, like what kind of adaptive things work, what kind of standard things work.
It's lots of trial and error.
Yeah, because it's like when you have such a specific deal, it's like not only is it something that the trainer's never seen before, she's like, like I'm not sure what to Google. One hand, but sort of not lifting. Like that's how I found you guys, because so much of the adaptive lifting stuff I found, it seems geared a lot of it towards like veterans and amputees, which is sick, but not my specific deal. Like I've got some fingers, there's just not as many as one might expect. So I'm still trying to figure it out, but it's kind of this project, like a personal project, I guess. Like I don't think I'll ever be like a competitor, but I don't need to be. I'm very competitive in everything else I do. I just want to
That's
get.
enough. Get that covered.
Yeah, and it's like it makes my brain turn off. So it's just like I just have to pick thing up, do it right, put it down. It's so soothing.
It's amazing that bench was like also a good and easy lift for you at first because I don't know, I can imagine like even, our friend Chloe who was on here, bench was really hard for her in the beginning. Now she's benching more than two plates
So cool.
with two fingers, you know, like
I have to figure out what she does, because I figured out like I can do it, but I can the frustrating thing for me is that like I know I could get strong, I know I can lift heavy
yeah.
things. It's just grip and balance that's an issue, and that's where it starts getting like frustrating. Like that's when I start feeling like I wish I just had five fucking fingers just for like an hour. You can have them
Yeah.
back, but like just
That's
here.
when you hit the roadblock. Like, fuck, why do I gotta deal with this?
Yeah, like I found like we started playing with the trap bar. And I was like, oh, okay, this I think I can work with this.
The
I found
angle's
like
better.
a yeah, I found like a this little claw, like hook thing I found that you like wrap around your wrist and there's a hook and you
Yeah,
use it
that's
until.
kind of what
Yeah.
my breath uses, yeah.
Yeah, I think I might have saw it on one of your videos, but like, oh, okay, I'm gonna try that. But it's kind of funny to feel your way out through these things in like a commercial gym. Like, I think everyone may at some point probably has that thought of, oh my God, are people looking at me with my
They're
thing.
definitely looking at you.
Yeah. And I think with my thing, going back to that, like, I do not necessarily wish to be perceived. I'm like, oh no, I know they're gonna look at me because I'm gonna whip out something they haven't seen before. And that's fine, I understand, but like just do not perceive me. I would like to be left alone to figure this
Yeah.
out. So I don't know. What
Especially
is
in the
your experience?
beginning. Yeah.
Yeah. What has your experience been with like figuring it all out?
I mean, it took years, and it's been almost 9 or 10 years of that constant trial and error. Like when you find your one equipment, like I use the Howlin hook, which has the Howlin hook or the Harbinger hook that has the hook attached to the strap. It's gonna fall apart after a few months because of the heavy weight.
Yeah, if
So,
you like it, buy it twice.
yeah.
Just
And
like
then,
jeans.
yeah, and other people who I know, use, you know, other types of straps where it doesn't get in the way of the fingers that they do have, because I have zero like long fingers, you know. And that works for grip and like I guess just any type of mobility. And yeah, and it's amazing like how unique everyone's body is, and you can kind of figure your way around that and finding that first like great gym to show you that you can do it,
Yeah.
I think was, yeah, that's like best story you could have started with in lifting.
Yeah, collective
Yeah,
save is
it's
yeah.
gonna be trial and error no matter what. But as long as you find a place where you feel safe and you're like, well, I can make mistakes here and I can fuck it up and like nobody's gonna make me feel like shit, then you'll be all right.
Yeah, that's the
That's the
thought.
biggest part.
My nature is so like, if I'm not good at something right away, I'm like, Because I'm used to the things that I do, I'm good at because I've done them for like one of those. Like, oh, cool. Like, the
Yeah.
things I'm good at, I'm good at. And starting a new thing is kind of scary. So I'm like, don't get frustrated and get mad and give up. Doesn't do that. Just be bad at it. It's
Just do the
okay.
thing. Just do the thing. That's
Yeah.
all.
But
Do
the
it
robots are
horribly, do it
great.
shitty, whatever. Do the thing.
If you have us on Instagram or find us on Instagram, I'm sure on one of our story highlights, we have like all the tools that we've used, like Marcy used, I used, and then Chloe, I think, was like the Rex's grip or Rex's strap or
She
something
uses
like
a
that.
specific like strap because there's different wrist straps.
Right. Like
Yeah.
navigating all this stuff.
Yeah,
Because it's.
there's different. Yeah, there's like just figuring out the different equipment that already exist for anybody and then trying that out. I mean, like, all right, if this doesn't work, all right, and so what exists that's created just for somebody with a disability? And then trying that, like,
Yeah,
it's
and
even
it's
just wrist straps. There's regular wrist straps, there's figure eights, there's the Rex strap that Chloe uses. Like,
oh, the figure
it's
eight, yeah,
that's
that's what.
literally three different kinds of wrist straps, and that's only
But
one piece
and
of
it's not even
equipment.
meant for us, right? It's not even an
Yeah.
unadaptive
So
tool.
you could
It's just
try
something
all
we
of
got.
those three and then be like, all right, that doesn't
Right?
work. Now what else? Like,
It's
you need
wild,
like a
and it's like,
notebook, like you need like an Excel sheet, like.
dude. No, I'm so glad I found what you all are doing. So it's not only is it just intimidating because you're trying to learn a thing, like it's intimidating being the only person you know who has to deal with this.
Yeah.
So it's like it kind of sometimes makes me feel like a little kid again, where I'm like, oh no, I'm different and it's not fun.
Yeah, it's
But
isolating for sure.
Yeah, but it's also like, well, I know there's more people out there like that, and I've met some people like in the collective strength world. Like, I know that I'm not all by myself this time, and it feels it's still a little daunting. But you know what? Even if I'm not supposed to be here, I'm here.
Yeah. Gonna do the thing.
And recognizing that that is so common, like being the first to try out something in your field, like having a trainer or a coach who has never seen anyone like you and is, willing to learn with you and willing to find those tools, which is amazing.
Yeah.
That's really all we need to start with.
Yeah, like we're helping each. I'm like, I wish you knew this, but also like, why would you? I suppose. Yeah, like it's not like when you're a little bit on the rarer side, it's like, well, I guess I can't expect you to know exactly what to do with this specific setup because I don't, and I am that. So fair enough.
Yeah, fair. That's fair. That's lovely. I think there's still so many things that I could ask about, like whiskey things and tea things and tons of other stuff.
I'll
There's
just have
just
to
so
record
much.
labels, jeez.
Yeah, so I think we're gonna have to. We didn't even, I mean, yeah, I guess we did talk about your book. But if you could just real quick talk about where your book is, what's the name, and how people can get it if they want to learn more about the work stuff, labor stuff.
Yeah, the work stuff. And it's coming out in paperback in the spring or the summer, so we can just talk more about it then.
Okay.
But yeah, my book is called Fight Like Hell, The Untold History of American Labor. It came out right before May Day, about 6 months ago this year, so 2022, on One Signal. And you can find it kind of everywhere. Like it's on Amazon, but like boo Amazon. It very, very much a fan of people getting it from independent bookstores or from the library or borrow it from your friends. I don't really care. Just if you steal it from Barnes and Noble, not from the
Yeah.
mom. They hate when I say things like
I love it.
that.
They'll
But
be all right.
yeah.
They'll be okay.
They don't even
Yeah.
notice.
They'll be
Yeah, Sam and
okay.
sister will be fine. But yeah, it's out there in the world. I'm gonna be doing a paperback version with I think some well, gonna fix a couple typos and add some new stuff. And I'm also, this is kind of cool. Hasn't really been announced yet, but I'm working on a young readers edition on this book for kids like 10 and up. So I'm gonna working
That's
on this for the
neat.
next couple months. Yeah. Basically just picking out some of the most fun people in the book and just kind of.
Ooh, we're about to have a banned book on the list. Yes,
Oh,
queen.
yo, I'm
It's
just.
about to get added to that list quick. I love
Yeah,
it.
they're gonna love me down in Texas. Yeah, that's the next thing. And then yeah, I guess keep writing stuff and talking to people about it and writing more articles and going to
Yeah, I
the gym.
love
That's the
it.
plan.
That's so
That's the
funny.
plan. Yeah, come back to us next year. We got to catch up and see where you're at. If Yeah.
anyone wants to find and follow you, where can they do that in a non-creepy, totally supportive way?
I feel like I'm gonna be on Twitter till the wheels fall off.
Yeah.
So I'm at Grim Kim there, my old college radio DJ name. So that's
Oh,
how long I've
nice.
had Twitter.
Oh, nice.
I think people see it now are like, what does that mean? Like, if you know,
Is
you
she like a
know.
spooky girly or something? I don't get
I mean,
it.
yeah, close enough. I used to have a radio show and everything called
That's
Dawn of
it.
the Apocalypse. But yeah,
Yes.
on Twitter, I have an Instagram I made. It's just Kim Kelly Writer, like writer. If you Google me, who knows what's gonna come up? I've been out here for a while, but hopefully some good stuff. And yeah, I haven't figured out TikTok yet. Maybe someday.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a bad I could actually send you something if you want to like figure it out. Although I'm like a different industry, but I think the tips would help because I wrote shit that as an elder millennial trying to learn the app, I talked to like some younger people as successful and I like took notes and shit. So I'll send you it
That. I think
because that
it'd
as a platform for like the shit that you're doing, people would eat that up.
I think it'd be fun. I
You
just
would
I'm
eat it
surprised you
up.
weren't.
Like I could see you
But
on there like with the screenshot and like your head in the
yeah,
corner just like
dude,
talking through shit.
gesticulating up a storm.
Yeah.
Yeah, Twitter's, just as fun, just not without the multimedia, I think, right?
It's hard. It's hard to learn new things and buttons and like, oh, what do I click?
Oh my God, I feel
It's
like I
hard.
missed entire like Snapchat. Who knows? I feel like I missed that whole
Yeah.
time. None of my 34-year-old
don't really
business.
understand
It's
it. That's
okay. I'm not on
okay.
TikTok either, but I can see how you can be very successful on there.
Yeah.
Yes.
But yeah, I'm around. I'm pretty easy to find, and I have a public email address just in case you need me, but I'll make you guys look a little bit harder to find that one. There you go.
If you really mean it, you'll find it.
Yeah.
All right. Lovely. Thank you so much. Well, thank you.
Seriously.
Fantastic.
This was really fun. Thank you so much for hanging out and talking to me, and also for giving me tips, because I was in the back of my head, I was like, I hope they tell me some cool things about ladies, and then I'm gonna go to the gym after this and be like, well, so they just told me this.
And I just
Oh,
sent you some
yes.
videos too. Thank
Hell
you.
yeah. All right. Disabled girls out.
Thanks for listening to Disabled Girls Who Left. We appreciate all of your support and everyone who's taken the time to show us some love. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, or write a review of our channel. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Player FM, Google Podcasts, and more. You can also find us on Instagram @DisabledGirlsWhoLift.